Welcome back to part two of the What's Current podcast that we did with Sam Lawler. And in this podcast, we continue looking at Sam's journey in the electrical industry and also delve into electrical training and qualifications. Enjoy.
Just getting back to your journey then, Sam. So you, at this point, you're doing lots of different things of assessing, teaching, and you're on the tools. And then I met you at, we first met at Trade Skills for the year. But that was down in London, wasn't it,
when we met? No, we were in Gatwick that day. I took over.
When did you get there?
Well, I was actually, I went to interview for the role in Coventry as the centre manager.
Yeah, is this after the bit where you're doing everything?
Yeah, that was after, so Dudley College, I went on full time for them, did both teaching and talked for a few years with them while I was teaching stroke managing with them. And then I saw the advert for, you know, running your own centre, private training. Now the allure, because I loved RCI, I absolutely loved teaching adults and that kind of environment. And it was a big sort of, I'd love to run my own centre. I mean, that'd be amazing. So, I went for the interviews to run my own centre for Trade Skills for You.
At the Coventry.
City and Guilds Electrical. So that was in the Coventry Centre. And over COVID, they lost their branch manager. We had four centre managers. Then they made that two centre managers, and myself and John.
So we
ended up north and south. That's why I ended up looking after Gatwick as well.
Because you were in charge of the apprenticeship provision there.
Yeah, and then I took over the apprenticeship operations manager for a bit. Unfortunately, in my journey, my sister passed away 2 years ago, and that did give me a massive shock. I've got to reevaluate what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
I've got a niece and two nephews now. They're loving to pieces, but I had to reevaluate. I've got to do something that I need to be around a bit more, and I need to have a bit more flexibility. I wasn't getting that where I was.
Was that just a crazy role then?
It was a crazy role because at that point, when I was the operation manager, looked after all of the country, so all four centres, the apprenticeship provision. I understood that what they were trying to do. It wasn't for me at that point.
Sounds like a big workload.
It was a big workload. I was working some city hours at some point.
Those jobs of like curriculum heads or running centres or branches, they sound attractive, and sometimes the salary is quite attractive, but they want the pound of flesh in those roles, don't they?
Absolutely.
And that's nothing against those organisations. They're trying to run commercial businesses, but I've been there, and I think you're right. And if something like, you know, a tragedy happens in the family, you do need to reassess and think, what am I actually doing?
I did, I was having
fair
that.
Fair play to you.
It's what we were saying earlier. I'd realised I've got so much experience in the industry now, and it was always having that self-confidence, because I think working for people all the time, I kept thinking, well, they're only going to pay me what I'm worth, or they're only going to employ me to do whatever they think I can do. And it was a bit of self-actualisation on my part. I was like, hold on a minute, I can do this. I know how to do this. I've been doing this for 3 decades now.
So was that the next step?
That was the next step. My other half.
Is that when you set up the business?
Yeah, my other half said to me, let's register a business. I'm completely sad.
Why not? So, had to lose.
That was actually November in 2022. And then by January 2023, I was like, right, that's it. Let's get some work.
Brilliant. Fair play. Been enjoying it?
I have actually. Yeah. And you know what? I've been so surprised because I've always been under this, behind the barrier of like a company, if you like. I've been surprised at how many people even know I existed. And as soon as I started doing the LinkedIn stuff, and I started just dropping people messages and saying, look, I'm available for freelance work. One door closes, another one opens. And
that's right, I tracked you down. I saw Sam's available, she's coming in for a podcast.
Well, I imagine there's a shortage of electricians. Imagine there's a shortage of tutors out there in the industry as well. I imagine there's quite, as we was talking about the pros and cons of getting into it, would create a shortage as well. So that's really good for you.
I mean, I can't believe how many jobs I get every day from colleges and from from agencies. They're really struggling to attract them to tutors, but it comes back to what you said earlier. It's the salary, and now for me, I don't think I'm ever going to want to be employed by anybody again.
No,
I think now that I've gone down the freelance route, the idea for me, and the ideal would be 5 years' time, my 5-year plan is, maybe I will open my own training centre, I'm not sure yet, because I can do quite a lot online, I can do quite a lot of corporate, I do quite a lot of corporate gigs. So
you've got that flexibility now, haven't you, Sam? I think what you've opened up to yourself now is opportunities that you can take or reject. And I think having that freedom and balancing life in the meantime is a really good move. And also, you know, you can sort of say, well, this is my rate for coming to teach for you. I mean, I know, let's be brutal. And if they say, you know, it's a bit like when we used to do jobs for people and they say, oh, so-and-so down the road will do it cheaper. You can go, that's fine, you don't
that's
need
fine,
to use
don't
me.
Need me yeah.
But what you're getting if you do have me is you're getting someone quality in front of your students that's going to give a, you know, do a good day's work kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So, I like that.
I've been, like I say, I think it was a bit more self-esteem for me because didn't realise, although I come across very confident, and I do a lot of the time, I didn't realise how I was feeling like I wasn't, my self-esteem was pretty low, I didn't think of my self-worth.
Bit of imposter syndrome?
Imposter syndrome was massive.
I hear that a lot though.
And it was also trying to play with, you look online, and it's trying to play with, I call them the big balls, and I don't mean that in a sense as well, but it's trying to play, I'm trying to play in an environment with those people. And they've got donkey's years of experience compared to me.
Yeah.
But it's when you listen to them talk and watching some of your podcasts and watching some of the other guys' podcasts, and I'm going, actually, I agree with some of these things, but I also disagree with quite a lot. Yeah. I try not to get dragged into the arguments.
Yeah, stay away from them.
Definitely do that.
Thank you, Zavi Ball. Great, regularly, but I'm now confident enough to think, you know what, I can do this. I know what I'm doing, and I can do it. And it's took... I think I'm back to being that young woman that arrived on a building site and thought, I'm going to show this.
I'm going to do
this.
You've got that confidence back. That's great to see.
Yeah.
I mean, and you'd mentioned there about being the woman on that building site. So it'd be remiss of us not to talk about it, because it sounds a bit of a cliche thing to do. We've got a woman on a podcast. Tell us about your journey. Yeah. But you know, I've seen that with my own eyes. Mm. You know, from experience of women on site, working with them, tutors. Excellent tutors. Yeah. I don't know what it is with women tutors, but they just think differently from men.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I remember, you know, particular tutors that the science and principles that they would smash me out of the park teaching it because they just thought differently and got it across to students differently.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about some of the negative, perhaps, because our listeners will be keen on that. But there must have been positive challenges.
Yeah. Hindsight, I think it's the basics. Some of the basics weren't there. Welfare, like just even using a toilet was difficult at times.
Yeah.
But it was also the novelty element. I was followed around site. Oh, so many times I was followed around site by
creepy followers.
Oh yeah. For the trades, I remember this one scaffold I just used to appear. And it was really creepy, to the point where, in all fairness to the guys I worked with...
How old was you?
I was 18 at this point, 18, 19.
Yeah.
And you could almost guarantee that if I turned around in a room on my own, it'd be in a doorway. And that was weird. That was really creepy. But on the flip side of that, sometimes other trades were an issue, but as the guys that I worked with and my electricians, I ended up with like 15, 20 big brothers.
Which
again also had its own limitations, because if ever you walked into a pub with them, you couldn't speak to anybody else.
So are you talking to?
They did become protective of it, and it was the other physical thing was. You get that chivalry where people see me pick up a bundle of tube and they want to carry it for you. I'm like,
I can do it.
And it wasn't, I think I had this sort of eureka moment where I remember they put me on inspection testing, and then I was working with a guy called Carl, and he went to carry the pipe voice up the stairs. I was like, I'm the apprentice. I'll grab the pipe voice, 7 flights of stairs. And it was me having to sort of almost take those things and say, I can bend tube, I can put trunk in, I can do all of these things.
Yeah.
Just let me do it. And I became a bit of a plant room queen.
Yeah.
I was like putting trunk in, tray.
I'm trying to figure out the word. It's like an unconscious bias, isn't it?
And they didn't mean it. Yeah. They didn't mean it.
It's not like creepy scaffolder vibe, is
it?
It's like trying to help. It's trying to help.
He's being sexist, but not being
in a different kind of way. And it was, I was saying to some guys last week, the day that I realised that I was accepted by the guys on the site was the day I ended up driving home with a handlebar moustache on my face.
I mean,
stop all the police. Because my back light was out.
I bet that was an interesting conversation.
It was a smirk on his face the entire time.
Yeah.
And he was like, do I want to ask? And he could see I was wearing my side clothes. He was like, just get it fixed.
Yeah. Honcats as banter, you can't beat it. Yeah. How did you find that that female role within education? You've already mentioned they thought you were the health and safety inspector as an assessor. So you're breaking down some barriers there as well, aren't you? What was that like?
I think one of the toughest things for me, and I've never felt anything like it. It was, when was it? It was actually only a couple of years ago. I faced a situation where it was literally persecuting me for being that woman, right. Basically, where I trying to get spare time to do stuff and trying to be at home for my family and stuff like that. And then it was almost demanding that I was in the centre doing this, doing that all the time. Yeah. And it was the worst I've ever felt, because I was looking around me thinking, none of the guys you would ask to be in here doing this. You're only doing this because you want me in here for some reason. I don't know what that reason is. Even though I've told you that there's other issues there, but I think from an education perspective, the worst has been the kids.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering about
Is it 16 to 19 year olds? I'm guessing you're
16
teaching
to 19 year olds. I walked into a classroom, Wolverhampton College, in fairness, last year when I first started taking this role. And I walked in and one of the kids went, "Miss, what are you doing here? Why aren't you at home getting your nails done? Why isn't your man coming to work for you?" And I was
trying to get a rise out of
you. One of a sudden, I was like, "Hold on a minute." First of all, I was like, "Where are we? Back in the 50s?" And it was, and they just kept going on like that.
Well, one or two in the group. Obviously, the child's been educated that way. The child hasn't come up with these thoughts. It's been their environment, the child's grown up.
It's what they see on the online and on,
the Andrew Tate scenario and all that.
How did you end up dealing with that?
Oh my goodness.
You take a deep breath, you take a 10,
and you just crack on with it. A couple of times I was like, why? I did enter into the conversation. I was like, well, why do you think I should be at home?
Yeah.
Why don't you think I should be here? I said, have you learned anything this morning? Well, yeah, we've done this and this. I said, so is it not a benefit for me to be here teaching you? But some of them, I don't understand where it happened, where this generation came from. Because when I go out onto a building site to see the lads out on site, or the girls out on site, although I've only trained a handball in my time, they're all very, she's here to do the assessment. I need to be best behaviour, make sure that I'm doing it right. Yeah. But they're at the stage where they're preparing for AM2, they're preparing for...
They're a bit more mature.
Out in the real world, whereas I find it's difficult. The 16 to 18s that are forced into FE, if you like, they're the difficult ones. Ones that want to do it, that's why I really love private training. I really love what I'm doing now, because you get to pick and choose the people that you're working with, and it's usually people that want to be there. And I think we're talking, the issues in probably colleges at the moment are, you've got a lot of kids that have to go to college.
Yeah.
They have to be there.
Yeah.
Are they on the right course? Have they just picked someone out there?
Plumbing or electrical
normally. Everyone loves has loved teaching, but they love teaching people that want to learn.
Yeah.
Once you've got people that don't want to learn, because X, Y, Z, they're on a course and they want to be on, it becomes very difficult.
It becomes behaviour management, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You mentioned an interesting point there, Sam, just on that commercial, and you can choose now. Sort of, so if you was to go into a classroom of electricians, for instance, and you were doing a renewables qual for them, or maybe a level 3 inspection testing. I nearly went for 2391 then, but you've got to be so careful. Other courses are the road. How do you find that? Because I found in my time, even as a bloke, I always get the one at the front of the class with his pencils all and his are arranged, and he wants to have a competition with me about who's the most technically intelligent in the room. I say as a woman, is that a little bit harder? Can be.
It just reminds me of another incident that occurred just recently. A few months ago, I was teaching up north, and I was teaching 2391. First day, fine. Second day, one of the guys comes in really early, so I was in the room on my own. Comes in really early, and he sat down, and he said, "I've got to tell you something." He says, "This isn't a woman's game, is it?"
Oh my goodness.
Sorry, what do you mean? And they said, well, you know, all this, you know, trunking and conduit and doing all this physical work, it's not really for women, is it? And I was like, I said, are you being serious? I said, I'm a teacher. I said, oh, you know, I'm teaching you the inspection and testing this week. It was an inspection and testing course.
Is that for women?
And he was like, yeah, he said, don't get me wrong, you're very knowledgeable, you know what you're doing. Like, I said, but yeah, but you know, is it really for women coming into this game? And luckily enough, another person walked in the room, and I was dumbfounded at this point. I was like, did he actually just have that conversation with me? And the guy opposite could see that I wasn't comfortable with him.
Okay.
And he deliberately, at the end of the day, bless him, he sat there until the other guy was ready to walk out. Because he realised, I had a chat with him. I said, oh, thanks for that. I said, because this guy was deliberately coming in earlier and then staying after everybody else. And he did it on the next day as well. Mm. And
he's not asking me any questions. Oh, yeah, I'm struggling with these.
Well, he kept saying,
yeah,
that's not how we really do it. You're telling me how to do it in that book, but that's not how we really do it out of sight. And I was like, well, no, strictly speaking, mate, if you're not doing it this way, you're not doing it right.
You should be telling me this.
Yeah.
Because I've been assessing
it. It's like, I've got guidance note 3 here. Guidance note 3 says, this is the procedure and this is how we're doing it. So, yeah, but in the real world. I was like, no, in the real world.
Yeah.
This is what I'll
this
do.
This is what we should be doing. Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like you've had your battles, but you've also I like the fact that the Bailey's boys were
agile. Yeah, they
were. And like you say, that you've made mates for life, haven't you? You've moved on and they're probably doing something else. Well, some of them are probably still on the tools.
Yeah.
Some of my mates are that were Bailey's apprentices, but it sounds like you've had some good opportunities as well, and it's not held you back because you, like you said earlier, you're a bit of a go-getter anyway, aren't you? And I think you've got to go and get it in this industry. It's not going to be handed to you.
As well. It's not just not just women. Also, I think doing an apprenticeship, you do very much grow that thick skin very early.
Oh, you have to,
And you've got to get rhino skin,
they call it, don't they?
You couldn't treat apprentices like we used to get on site now. I mean, there's laws against some of the stuff that used to go on when I was apprentice, on your birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Like you say, I remember the moustaches and the glasses and the permanent marker.
Toolbox being screwed to the floor with all the tools in it.
Yeah. One of the lads had his backpack filled with expanding foam.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a classic.
Oh, one of them was terrified of moths. They put a moth in his lunchbox.
Oh, dear.
He opened his lunchbox, his sandwiches in there, and there's this moth come straight out. Yeah.
So that's good comedy. But there's a golden rule on site, you should never mess with another person's lunch.
No, you should not mess with
people's lunches.
Definitely
no. So, What do you feel the biggest challenges are for the next generation electricians since you've been driving them?
Yeah, I think at the moment it's the quality of placements that we can get from. Because I know that at the minute, like I say, it's a lot of small contractors that are employing apprentices. The introduction of domestic apprenticeship was a really good idea because we needed to have a robust system.
Are you for that?
I am actually for that. Because I see so many apprentices at the moment that are working on properties, and a lot of them are doing new builds. They're never going to touch the containment, but they're still on the old program.
Yeah.
So somewhere along the way, now they've got to go and get additional work to be able to meet the range.
Does it limit them though to only being a domestic electrician?
It limits them to being domestic. I mean, a lot of the guys that do new builds, it's not skilled.
Some of them only want to do that anyway. They fall into domestic and go, I don't want to do metal machine, that ain't for me. I'm happy doing rewires or new build houses, give me the price work. That's fine. I'll take nothing away from that. Does it limit that?
It limits their knowledge as far as doing the commercial side. So if that apprentice then wants to set, once they're qualified, wants to set up on their own, then I suppose it is limiting the commercial aspect. But it's only a couple of units on your.
You can add it on a commercial.
Full scope.
Yeah.
I saw that as a bit of a weird move, and I get why they did it in a way, but also I thought, if I've got a choice of doing a full electrical apprenticeship, but it does depend on the firm they're working for.
I haven't seen that in truck take on the domestic one.
No, that'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, most of my apprentices that I look after at the moment, because I'm doing some ad hoc assessment with JTL, they are usually always on a commercial apprenticeship. They haven't put them on the domestic.
No.
And like I say, at the end of it, you're then trying to shoehorn me into work.
So the problem is for the apprenticeship, they don't get the full range of work.
Skin range,
They need to complete the portfolio.
Because in some instances, companies get people in to do containment as well.
Yeah.
I know Bailey's do, but Andrew Bailey will get literally a fabrication team that can do all their containment for them. And obviously with the prefab stuff all coming through as well for the bigger commercial industrial jobs, then the apprentices are only really doing the little bits of connecting up or the little bits of joining up the trucking conduit.
The pod bathrooms.
I think one of the problems I saw a good few years ago at the college system is when I looked after the apprenticeship provision at a big college in the Midlands, I went down to the workshop just to speak to the technician because I was fairly new and I wanted to take my apprentice in there. And he looked at me like, why? And I said, well, they need to learn how to do the trunking, the basic wirings, you know, all these sort of first years. And he says, oh, no, we don't really do that here. He said, we just reserve this for the full-time learners because we haven't got provision here or to train the apprentices. So I was really confused. And then they said, you know, I found out that the idea really was that they learn all that practice skill on site and we're just there to do the theory. Now, obviously, you mentioned earlier about Bailey, they taught you the practical at their centre. But my worry was, you were shown the right way by good electricians. My worry is, if you're only getting that practical on site, you could be working with one of the worst electricians in the world that doesn't want you as an apprentice.
You could be working with an electrician
we don't do that.
So you could be shown one way at college,
and you could go to site and don't do that.
And it really shocked me because I thought, you know, we're just rushing through these units to get the theory into them. And you know, my premise of my time on the tools is the theory only ever backed up the practical. You understood why you were putting that thing in, why you were testing. It's not the other way around. So they were putting all the onus on the theory, where we tried to, you know, I remember it was theory in the morning, workshop in the afternoon. That was my apprenticeship model, and it's gone.
That really scares me.
Yeah. That really scares me because those hand coordination skills, the projects are that tight on site now. They haven't got time. So you can have an apprentice with you and say, oh, just sit in the van and go on your phone. It's quicker if I do it myself. Mm. And I don't really blame the spark. Well, I do a little bit, but they're under the cosh themselves. Yeah. Yeah. So even if we're getting people into the trade, the quality of the training, is it there?
I think that is the biggest concern. And a lot of my time at colleges has taught me that because obviously colleges and the funding comes from the previous year, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
And they're just trying to get the materials to actually
servicing that amount of learners
as well. And the amount of learners that they're taking on in the trades is just, it's growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
But how do we not turn those learners into tradespeople at the end of it?
How much we need them?
We really need them, and there's hundreds of them every year that are going into the trades. And you know, I know in a lot of the colleges, there's 100 plus per sort of level in electrical. But we're not seeing the turnaround to actually become electricians.
Most classes in colleges like the 16 to 19 year old to 20 minimum 20 students starting up with.
It'd be interesting to know that I bet the drop off rate's horrendous at the moment, isn't it? From like, you know, if you started with a stack of apprentices in a classroom of let's say 20, by the time they get towards their AM2, the drop off must be in the five and sixes over that class, I would have thought, which isn't great, is it?
No, it's really tough for them. But on the other side of it, I do understand companies saying, oh, you know, I haven't got time for this, I haven't got time for that, which is one thing. But I know the apprenticeship, the funding increased recently, didn't it? I mean, it's still not probably great over four years, if you think about it. But it's getting the buy-in from employers to say, you know, let's go back to basics, go back to the old school, we're used to teaching properly.
Yeah.
But I think we've got a gap where we haven't got those people on site. We're all teaching.
Yeah.
We're teaching because the gap's now missing on site where we're coming to this.
Yeah.
Because you've not got those experienced electricians.
I feel there are some good companies out there.
There are some really good ones
that are still like the Baileys models and that. You know, they're on a bad press of war, but we are in a shortage.
We are in a massive shortage.
Yeah. But they probably don't want that young person in their business because they can't see the added value. Whereas sort of an adult trainee is a probably better proposition for them, especially if they're self-funding, because if they're putting that money in themselves to retrain, you know, let's say they've been in IT and they want to become a spark in their 30s, 40s, that's probably a better proposition for a company because they've shown some drive, haven't they,
to go and do that.
I mean, they're going to be on a long journey themselves because there's no shortcut anymore. You know, all the sort of short courses, which were obviously quite bad, you know, the five-day wonders, we don't want those suddenly putting solar panels on our roofs.
No,
but, you know, they've got to come through a journey and that's going to take time. But they're probably a better, you know, if I was a company, I'd probably see that. And that's bad on 16 to 19 because they're not all the same.
No. It's the adult apprenticeships as well, isn't it? There's no age limit on apprenticeship now.
No.
So one of the things that we did start doing, like my last company, was a majority of them were adults. They weren't 16 to 19. The majority were sort of in their 20s or
30s. What sort of wage would they go? Minimum wage?
It's difficult because during the first year of the apprenticeship, technically, the employer only has to give them that apprentice wage. But I think most of them, because they're being adults, did talk to the company and always recommended it should be minimum wage to start with. And then obviously it grows as they get more experience, that can obviously go in line.
Yeah, the minimum wage for families and kids and houses and bills and all that. It could be, if you're on a salary like an IT guy, he would have been on a right salary and to drop.
Yes.
Because he wants to further his career. I understand you have to take a few steps back to go forward, but there is.
They're usually the guys that stick it out, though.
Yes. Yeah.
And they put their all into it.
So going back to that then, Ross, I think the changes that are needed, we've highlighted some of the changes, but there's definitely a problem with the model, and you've highlighted that, Sam, of like, we seem to be, even though we've had trailblazers and we've had revamps and we've had, you know, and I think they are better, we've had the domestic apprenticeship routes, it's all improvements in a way, but we are stuck in the dark ages with that, the way it's taught. And I think it's like, oh, it's not broke, don't try and fix it, but parts of it are broken, aren't it? We need to think differently how we're educating people. You mentioned, you know, you offering online services. Mm. Does it all need to be in a classroom? Mm. You know, obviously practical skills need to be enhanced. I think that's missing massively.
Practical is the bit that concerns me in the classroom, well, in the workshop, if you like, because sometimes, I mean, you were taking your guys into the workshop. I used to take them by, I'll be like, if I'm teaching this group, I'm taking them all into the workshop and I'll show them what to do myself.
Yeah.
But I think like the colleges haven't necessarily got the funding to be able to put a tutor in the workshop. Because if they're paying us as lecturers, they don't want us standing in the workshop.
They want you in the classroom, don't they?
Yeah. So that sort of practical, and that's where the shortcomings are coming on site. If they're not getting the practical training on site, and it's also missing from the classroom,
it goes back to the domestic guy. I'll use that reference.
Yeah.
They're doing twin and three wires. When they come to college, that's where they learn the conduits,
that's
the trunk, and
the other bits. Yeah,
because they're not getting that on site.
Yeah,
and that's fair enough.
And at least if they've done it, they've got half a chance of doing it. If somebody ever says to them, "Oh, I need this," because you know, even in domestic, occasionally you need to put some conduit down the outside.
More and more these days,
with the PV and the back.
Or they might, like I say, they do the apprenticeship and then they go into the real world, go to an agency and they go, "Right, you're going on to a commercial job, can you do that?" And they're not going to go,
I remember
being a project manager on a massive college, again in the Midlands. Like, we were working on the college. Well, it's actually Samuel College, it doesn't matter that I don't say it, sounding like I've signed a secret yet. Samuel College, and the guy, we were struggling to get the job done. It was mainly some second fixing, a bit of wiring. All the containment was done, and we were testing all the floors as we went down, and he turned up from the black book, desperate. Found an agency guy and he come with, I should have sussed him, he came with a chippy's bag, a green bag. I saw a level in it and a trowel, a load of screws in the bottom, I thought, oh, what have I got here? And I said, showed me his JRB gold card, all these quals on the back, fully, you know, checked it and everything. And then I said to him, oh yeah, third floor, mate, I need you to do it. And we've got some three phase boards and they all need connecting up. And he went, can I just stop you there, Steve? He says, I'll just do metal work.
Oh,
and I went, oh, okay. And this was probably a good 12, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
So the industry started to change over a decade ago, where people were just getting in these pigeonholes. Now, to me, what we've talked about today is an electrician isn't a house basher, isn't commercial industrial. An electrician, to me, is an electrical engineer that does a full range of work.
Yeah.
And the industry, like we've mentioned, the challenges, how do we get back to that?
I don't know.
Is that model dead now, where it's never going to come
I
back?
I think the way the world is, and like I talked about project managing, where a company win a job, and then they sub it out to an electrical company, and then that electrical company might sub it out again. You're going to be using subbies, and that's fair enough.
Yeah,
it's just the way the world is, but to put apprenticeship into that model doesn't work.
No, we've got to get back to a way.
I think you're right. It is the pigeonhole thing, but apprentices as a whole need to be able to do it. If they give them the broad range at college, like I was saying, then maybe what they're doing with their employers isn't that bad. Now, I do know that some electrical companies will sort of mix and match the apprentices around.
Yeah.
So they've got a domestic side, they've got a commercial side, they might have an and the apprentices move around a bit. But then I also know one apprentice that I'm working with at the minute, he doesn't do anything but solar.
Oh, really?
I'm going to cover his range of work.
Yeah,
you're not
lying. And it's a shame for him, because I know that he wants to, but he's unfortunately stuck in that. But as technologies move on as well, the apprenticeship needs to follow the technologies, because a lot of our trunking, a lot of the modular wiring systems and all that that's coming out now. How many of our installations are still conduit trunking tray ladder that hasn't been done sort of prefab and then dropped in? So it's I get it, but we should have the basic knowledge, but then the apprenticeship should reflect that this range of work may not necessarily be covered in this way. Yeah. Now, I know we used to have simulation, but people didn't like that.
No, it was being abused, wasn't it?
It was sort of frowned upon, wasn't it? But then, at the same time, I think we've got to get back to trusting the assessor that's going to see these guys and say, are they covering the range of work? Are they doing it to a good standard? And I'm all for, if he's doing that to a good standard, or they're doing that to a good standard, I should say, how strict are we going to be on, have they done X amount of basket? Have they done X amount of trunking?
It just becomes numbers then, doesn't it? Yeah, I know what you mean. I always felt that when I was assessing that I'm trying to get something for the sake of getting it, but I can see that that young person has got those qualities and competent. So do they need to competent in everything? You know, that those skills can come later. I think you're right with that. I think it all needs looking at from the actual qualification side, that needs looking at. But I think it was a good thing Trailblazers back in the day giving the company more say in the apprenticeship, but they almost went too far the other way, in my opinion. The company became king in that situation.
Companies cover such a broad range.
Yeah. And they don't want the responsibility of, like, suddenly they were given the money and they could pick a training provider, which to me was all like, we're in dangerous territory there. So I think it does need looking at. I think as long as we've got enough voices in industry that, you know, we're saying, like, we're a bit doom and gloom on this.
There's a lot of good people.
But there is positives,
There's a lot of people like Sam out there who've got the right interest, the heart.
You've still got a passion for the industry.
I've seen some really good electricians out there as well. I've got some apprentices on site. And you can see that their mentor is mentoring.
They've really got a passion.
They're investigating. I don't want it to come across like there's more out there than what we know. And those people, we need to sing their praises a bit more, realistically. And I think social media gets them.
Well, I like seeing on social media the amount of amount of sparks out there that are actually doing these kind of things and talking to other people in the industry. And they are raising the awareness. Yeah. And it's getting the buy-in for maybe the bigger employers.
Yes.
Because the smaller employers are passionate.
Yes.
They're passionate about it, but it's getting them all to sort of to come along with it and also give the opportunity for the apprenticeships.
I think that's a really good point. I think that's really good that, you know, it isn't doom and gloom. You've seen some really good examples.
Some really good practice recently.
So now you're literally out there doing it on your own and you're loving life and you're getting all these I'm surprised your phone is back. If people do want to get in contact with you, Sam, and know a little bit more about what you do, that might be potential employers, apprentices that are struggling, I take it, you get all kinds of weird and wonderful phone calls. Where can they get in touch?
My company's I've got a website that's LE Training, Lawler Electrotech Training, and also on my website there's my phone number, or even on LinkedIn.
Find me on LinkedIn.
Samantha Lawler on LinkedIn, and I'll I've had loads of people messaging me on LinkedIn, apprentices and you know, learners that I've even taught. Anybody that needs help with anything, I'm always on the phone.
Keep doing what you're doing, because when I saw you appear on there, and you know, you were just being real and how passionate you are about the industry, that really comes across. So I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, I think that's it for us then.
Thanks for coming in, Sam.
Yeah. So thanks for listening for another What's Current podcast from NAPIT. Hope you enjoyed that one. It's going to be a two-parter because we ended up rambling forever, but hopefully it was good stuff. And see you on the next one.